ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports.
How about that?
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! The heavyweight champion is taking the mandatory 8-count, and Foreman is as poised as can be!
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
If he gets through this dragnet, he's as slippery as a nail in a barrel full of oil.
Pedro Fernandez.
It works for me.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. My name is Pedro Fernandez. Of course, I am the modest one-year host here for 37, make that 38-plus years now of Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Of course, we're often imitated but never duplicated straight up if you listen to us for the next 2 hours, as this is the Sunday edition, 2 hours live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, and our brand-new SiriusXM satellite radio channel, channel 217, of course, a plethora of other internet platforms. Bottom line is, if you listen to Ring Talk, Live Worldwide, right on, we got a good show for 2 hours. In hour number one, we'll check in, of course, with the retired HBO godfather, Mr. Larry Merchant, Mr. Hall of Famer. He's on deadline, and being a former writer myself, since I don't get paid to write anymore, but it's so I call myself a former writer. Anyway, it's a unique experience to be on deadline for a magazine. Anyway, bottom line is Larry Merchant talks about that, and of course, the big fight coming up looks like it's signed. I'm talking about Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua, of course, the battle for the heavyweight championship of the world. We'll also talk about this weekend results. We've got the U.S. seed as well. We've got Muhammad Ali. We'll spend some time with Max Holloway. And, of course, we'll go through each of boxing's divisions in hour number two and say who are the real stars in boxing, if there are enough stars in this game to keep it going in the year of 2021. Because, you know, epidemic or pandemic or not, people say this Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua fight will put like 80,000 people or 100,000 people in the stadium. How can you put 100,000 people in a stadium in the midst of a pandemic? So I'll poise those questions to the retired HBO godfather when we come back here on Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Open phone lines around the planet, 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. Get this, the guilt-free no-commitment text line, 415-275-1613. Text us, 415-275-1613. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. The sweet sounds of Motown. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Those studios, they're available. You can go to Detroit if you get the chance and go downtown, go to West Grandview Boulevard and take a tour of the Motown Museum. It is an epic visit, I kid you not. But check this out. Larry Merchant's our guest. Good morning, Godfather. How are you, sir?
I'm okay.
Okay, you know, I was talking about the Motown Museum right there.
Which is pretty good these days.
Okay, all right. So I was talking about the Motown Museum right there. Emmanuel Stewart had never been to the Motown Museum. Every time I went to Detroit, he said we were going to go to the Motown Museum, like, I must have been there a dozen times, and he said we were going to go there 9 or 10 times, and we never went. Man, so that, anyway, I just thought I would throw that in there. I miss him. I miss the God, the Goldfather. That's what I called him, the Goldfather.
Well, I miss him, too. He was a good man.
A good man. And, you know, I used to get these phone calls from him from the Ukraine at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and he was started off with some nice cuss words. I mean, they were affectionate, and I don't know how to put that to anybody if they don't know what I'm talking about, but he would open me up, and I'd say to him, Emmanuel, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and he'd say to me, it's only 3 o'clock in the afternoon here. So anyway, bottom line is I miss those phone calls at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. Of course, we'll come coming from unknown. You look at the phone, it says unknown, and you go, oh, good Lord, do I pick this phone call up at 3 o'clock in the morning or not? And sure enough, more often than not, it was the Goldfather, Emmanuel Stewart of the Kronk, Jim Mahey, rest in peace.
So you were getting robocalls from Emmanuel.
robocalls from Emmanuel, and you know what? He called whenever he wanted, and I think that was so cool. He would call me and let off steam. He would call me and tell me good things. He'd call me and tell me about the Klitschkos and this and that. And these were things that, of course, that Godfather being a journalist, I wanted to write about, but I never could. And that was our little, people say to me, write a book, I don't want to write a book about the confidential arrangements that I had with people over my life, throughout my life. I think that would be a breach of our confidence.
Of course. But I don't feel badly that Emmanuel didn't call me at 3 a.m.
Hey, I remember my girl, the girl I was living with at the time, she used to say to me, because I would talk to him in bed. You know, I mean, you know, what are you going to do? Get up? Anyway, bottom line is she was crazy. Who's that guy calling you at 3 a.m? Yeah, well, shut up. He's more important than you, right, at this point in time. Anyway, speaking of important, the heavyweight champions of the world, unfortunately, there is more than one, but Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua. Of course, Fury now 30-0 with that one draw against Deontay Wilder, which he erased when he obliterated Mr. Wilder in that rematch. He's 30-0-1. Of course, Mr. Joshua, having been knocked out by Auntie Louise, and a.k.a. Andy Ruiz, is 24-1. These guys are going to hook it up, looks like in April or May, June at the latest, somewhere in the U.K. You think this is the greatest thing for boxing? Talk to me.
Well, I do, as all the major events of boxing have generally been among heavyweights to attract casual fans. But this one is more than just another big heavyweight fight. In Great Britain, it could fill parks and countryside, and it'll be a wonderfully maniacal time over there, and I think it'll get a lot of coverage and followers here as well. Basically, we want to see the fight.
You know, Godfather, I can't remember, it was in the 80s, I believe, somebody sent me a picture from the Philippines. They had 1,300,000 people outdoors for a fight involving Luisito Espinoza. At one point in time, I think it was a WBA featherweight champion. He was fighting a guy from Japan, I believe, at the time. But they had 1.3 million people outside. Could they do that? You just talked about the countryside. Could this fight conceivably draw that many people if they had an arena that big in the UK?
Yes, I believe so. I mean, it's a gigantic event. Two fascinating personalities and top fighters meeting in Britain. When is the last time that Britain had a major event like this? Maybe in the early 19th century. I'm not sure.
Interesting. Larry Merchant's our guest. Of course, the big fight's going to be in the UK. Okay, now the next question is, how do we vaccinate 90,000 people? Or, you know, we're going to put 90,000 people in a stadium in the midst of the pandemic. I mean, this is...
it's a fair question. I wouldn't be surprised if, and they're having problems with the pandemic in Britain, that we're not here with the
variants,
newer versions of COVID-19. So they might kick it down the road for a few months if they have to. And I don't know how you vaccinate everybody, and I don't know if you could vaccinate everybody walking into the arena, whether the vaccine neutralizes COVID-19 by the time you get to your seat. So I don't think it works quite that fast. I'll find out soon, by the way. I'm up for a vaccination on Tuesday.
So is the godmama, Patricia Stitch Merchant, going to be there as well? Is she going to get a shot?
Yeah, we're both going to get a shot. And then have to get another shot. They'll tell us when, presumably. But we got on the list. We're
fantastic.
Old.
That's, well, I'm a couple of years from that as far as statistically. The number is 65, and I'll be 63 in November, so I'm a couple of years from being in that age bracket. But the bottom line is, I'm very phobic, having looked at some of the vaccine issues over the years and studied the Muskegee Project, of course, which when they use vaccines to experiment on black people. So you get a little phobic, and there were some problems with the polio vaccine in the mid-60s. But all in all, I mean, the smallpox vaccine, the polio vaccine, in my lifetime, vaccines have been a plus. So I don't know what's going on as far as everybody being anti-vaccine.
I don't either. I don't know if there are that many people who are afraid to have needles stuck into them, or whether it's some religious or philosophical belief, and so on. But I know I'm old enough that I experienced a polio outburst when I was a kid. And during the summer, my mother wouldn't allow me to go into pools, but I could go into the ocean. And along came Dr. Salk, who found the vaccine, and we haven't had a problem with polio since. So I'm a true believer in science.
Well, you know, during the smallpox outbreak in New York City got mobilized, and I think they vaccinated almost the whole city in a week. I mean, it was just amazing. It was the greatest vaccination program of all time. I think the president elect Biden should take a look to the way New York did the smallpox vaccine. Now on to another subject. The world of boxing right now, we've got these two heavyweight champions going to go at it. That's going to throw some light on the sport. We've got the young kid from Brooklyn, New York, Teofimo Lopez, probably going down to Australia to fight the Cara Brasas guy, the undefeated 19-0 kid that can fight a little bit, but probably not going to beat Lopez. They're trying to pack a stadium down there. Everything is contingent on something we just talked about. That vaccine, or being able to get 90,000 people in a stadium, because that's why they're bringing Lopez down to Australia, is to fill one of those stadiums. You know, the opponent brings the title, but those hometown guys bring the fans.
Right. Look, it's not unusual at certain levels of the game for certain reasons for fighters to go to obscure places, because someone wants to put up a lot of money, or they have some advantage there. Australia has done a really good job of dealing with the pandemic, and presumably their hope is a packed stadium and like that.
Okay.
Jack Johnson, the first black heavyweight champion, won his championship in Australia.
Mm-hmm. Wow, he fought here in San Francisco. They had an outdoor stadium built out on the Daly City border because boxing was illegal in San Francisco. So I drive by this area in San Francisco on the Mission Street, Mission and Sickles. That's where the 100,000-seat stadium. Last question before I go, and I'm going to put you on the spot before I let you go, Godfather. Floyd Mayweather is going to do some exhibition and make a few million dollars in a couple of months or something like that. Why is it that Floyd has been able to perpetrate a con on just about everybody but you and me?
Well, I don't think it's everybody. Fighting exhibitions means, I don't know, is it against an MMA guy?
It's against a celebrity, but even when he was boxing.
Oh, that celebrity character from YouTube?
Something like that, yeah.
Hey, you know what? There's a big part of boxing that's just showbiz. And that is the biggest part of boxing, exhibition boxing as showbiz. If they can pull it off, and if there are enough knuckleheads out there that want to pay for it, good luck to them.
With that, Godfather, I wish you a very good Sunday and a very good week continued. You're on deadline for a
for a magazine article, and I got to tell you, they sent me to La Paz, Mexico one time to write this story for a high school magazine or something like that of America. And I went down there. They sent me down there for 11 days. And for 9 days, I kicked back and had a great time. And for the last 36 hours, I wrote straight, okay? And I think it was like a 6,000-word article. It was one of the best pieces I've ever written in my life. But I had the 11 days and I only used 1.5. What I'm trying to say is I wrote better, I think, on that deadline being pushed like I did than I would have if I started.
Well, I have pushed myself into a corner, and now I have to fight my way out.
Good enough. Kiss the God, Mama. We'll talk soon.
Take care, Pedro.
The great Larry Merchant on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. My mother said it was never bragging, you were telling the truth. Bottom line is, I'll bring in my next guest. Of course, he's a co-manager of Roberto Duran and a stellar amateur boxer. And this time, I'm talking about Hector Martinez. A very good morning to you, Mr. Martinez, sir. He dropped. Okay, we'll try to pick it up once again. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking to the world of boxing, MMA. We're trying to get Hector Martinez on the line. Of course, he is a former two-time Golden Glove champion here in Northern California, a guy that really was the most skilled of us all as far as pound-for-pound boxers were concerned. The bottom line is he was the co-manager of Roberto Duran for a long time, of course, and he worked with Mike Acree, a good friend of Mike Acree. So Mike Acree, the boxing promoter extraordinaire from a place called Erie, Pennsylvania, and he wasn't an Erie guy. Mike was a good guy. Mike was a bit of a strange guy. Mike was a clean freak. Mike was one of those guys that was using Lysol and all that kind of good stuff. We check into a hotel. We would check into a hotel, and before we check into, I mean, we go to our rooms, right? And there would be like an hour and a half where Mike was just indisposed. And you went, what the hell is he doing? What the hell, you know, is he doing drugs? What's Mike doing for an hour and a half? He's spraying down the room with Lysol. That's what he's doing. So we're wondering, well, Mike's doing for the first hour he's checked into the hotel. That's what he's doing. He's spraying down the room, wiping down everything, taking the bedspread off the top of the bed, the whole nine yards. I mean, he was the original germaphobe of boxing, my buddy Mike Acree. Now, we take it to the city by the bay, San Francisco, California, bring in Mike Acree's former business partner, my good friend. I'm talking about Mr. Hector Martinez. Mr. Martinez, how's life treating you?
Life is good. Just trying to stay safe and healthy, that's all.
So have you had any run-ins with bad health of late?
No, but I ran into COVID.
Okay, well, how did that? All right, let's talk about that. How'd that work out?
Well, I'm here, ain't I?
Okay.
I could answer the phone, so I'm happy.
That's a good one.
And the road was not too bumpy.
Okay, the road was not fantastic, man. That's the best news I think a lot of people can hear. So, you know, some people, doesn't it boil down to a lottery, Hector? In other words, what you can get, you can kick in like 3 or 4 days and have a cold and a sore throat and your voice goes off, but yet maybe it could kill me.
That's definitely true. And we also don't know if we catch it the second time, is that going to be worse? So
yeah,
there's no guarantee with life right now or any time, really.
Okay. Speaking of life, of course, a life that we know ended this week at the age of 63, way too young. Mike Acree, Mr. Health Freak, I was talking about him spraying down the hotel room. Brave, he brought his own – did you know he brought his own pillowcases?
No, I didn't. But I was definitely aware that he liked to come in and disinfect the beds, without a doubt. That was Mike Acree. All right? He was anti-COVID back then. All right? He took all precautions. He was just a clean freak, and there was nothing wrong with that. Just that we weren't used to doing that. But he was just doing the right thing. That was all.
Yeah, I know. I mean, he would like disinfect the telephone. It was hysterical. But you know, it just proves
he was ahead of the time. That's
he was
all.
Ahead of his
look
time.
What we're all doing now.
Yeah, of course, only 63 years old. Talk about the times when you and him were guiding Roberto Duran, because that couldn't have been an easy thing. Roberto's not the easiest guy to work, especially when you're trying to get him to lose weight and work and diet and all that kind of good stuff. Nobody wants a diet. How many calories was he on at one point in time?
He was on about 2,000 a day.
What is that?
2,000 a day. 2,000 a day. His meals looked very small to him. He fought with everybody. He didn't fight with me. I was pretty lucky on that. But he fought with everybody around the house. And the key was to get Roberto to show up in the best shape, look presentable, and have a safe fight. And I want to thank Mike Akery, and it was an honor to work with him, mm-hmm. because he thought the same way also. It wasn't just go in there and throw the fighter in there and make some money. Mike knew that he was dealing with a legend, and he knew that when it was all over, he had to make sure that Roberto was as healthy and sane as possible. And he really looked out for that, and he expressed it as well. Something that you probably may not hear promoters talk about, but Mike was definitely conscious about that. And we worked very smooth. You know, our job was to show up with Roberto in good shape, try to attend the press conferences, give the best presentations. Mike and Louis DeCubas did a great job. And it was an honor to work with them.
Okay. And Duran, that the big comeback, the final comeback when he won the World Middleweight Championship against Iran Barkley, of course, on that stormy day in February of 1989. I mean, what was a pivotal fight? Was it beating Juan Carlos Jimenez? Was that the sort of the fight that sort of put Roberto back in the rankings? Because a lot of people, didn't, the guy was once beaten, I think, from South America. Guys didn't think he was going to beat him.
True, he was a big, strong guy, but, you know, Roberto getting in even at least in decent shape, his skills would always pull him through. His skills and experience, I'm sorry. That's what I think was always the key. Even though he was giving up age and size sometimes, he could pull it off with having a little bit of conditioning and his experience.
June of 1983, we got a couple of minutes left. He pulled off, of course, the beatdown of Davey Moore. You said that was revenge or he was trying to atone himself for the No Mas loss. Why don't you explain that a little bit?
The way I always see it, yes. After the second Sugar Ray Leonard fight, Roberto felt that the boxing world and people in Panama had turned their back on him. And Roberto, that was something new to Roberto. That never happened to Roberto in his whole boxing career. So at that time, he was trying to get a fight, and he was having difficulty with the promoters because it seemed like they turned his back on him. I think Ray Arcel had also left him. He didn't want to work with him anymore. So at that time, when it came to something like that, Roberto's heart was into it. Get out the way. If Roberto's heart is into it, you're in trouble. And I feel sorry for Davey Moore because he was the victim. Roberto went in there and used all his experience. And Roberto fought his ass off.
Good point. If Davey Moore would have only put that car in park. I got to run. Thanks for the appearance on the show. Of course, Mike Akey, may he rest in peace. All the best to you, young man. Thank you for your time.
Take care. Have a good day. Bye.
You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Mike Akery, 63 years old, promoted from Erie, Pennsylvania. I've got all kinds of Mike Akery stories, but, you know, you don't want to hear Mike Akery stories, I don't think. Well, I may tell a couple yet. Of course, this is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. We'll be here for another hour and a half, live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, Channel 217, and a plethora of other internet platforms. This is Ring Talk, and you, baby, know it.
Words unspoken, silence unruly.
The trumpet of the great Mick Gillette saw his last show at Tower of Power at Yoshi's in Oakland, California. It was an early show. He got into a fight with the lead singer, who was then Larry Braggs, who then went on to the Temptations and things like that. But they got into a fight in between shows at Yoshi's, and Mick didn't come out for the second show. And here I was sitting in the booth with the Tower of Power alum family. I'm talking about Mick Gillette's wife and this and that. And she wasn't there for the second show, and neither was Mick. So that was a little bit stunned. But Mick Gillette and Tower of Power powered away. Of course, Mick passed away a couple of years ago. If ever there was a guy in the band that gave back to the community, outside of Lenny Williams, of course, he's no longer with the band, but it was Mick Gillette. There was absolutely no doubt about it. He did more as far as educating kids in music and putting bands and orchestras together in high schools and all that kind of good stuff. May he rest in peace, the great Mick Gillette. You were tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, checking your inside look into the world of boxing and MMA. Of course, the former featherweight champion of the UFC, I'm talking about the 145-pound division, Mr. Max Holloway, a guy, of course, that does a lot of dirty boxing. Comes to us, of course, from across the pond. I'm talking about Hawaii, won a unanimous nod last night over five rounds over a guy named Calvin Kattar. Another fight that should have been stopped a lot sooner than it did. Let me tell you about these scorecards. If you whoop on a guy for five rounds and it's a shutout, it's 50-45 in mixed martial arts. They give you 10 points to the winner or 9 points or less to the loser, okay? These scores were 50-43, which meant there were 2 10-8 rounds at least. 50-43 again, and then 50-42. I mean, somebody saw that it was either 2 10-8 rounds or 3 10-8 rounds or maybe a 10-7 round, but the bottom line is it was a beatdown of monumental proportions. And these are the type of beatdowns that leave you permanently damaged. And I can't understand why this guy's corner, I mean, if they were his corner, they should be arrested for not protecting this guy. I'm telling you, Calvin Kattar was forced to endure unbelievable an amount of brutal brutality. He just didn't deserve it. Listen, fighters are human beings. And if you bloodthirsty people out there, you got to see the blood. You got to see guys almost get killed. You hang out with Dana White, that's cool, man. But guess what? I'm a former fighter, former boxer. Okay. And I believe that the residual effects of combat sports are permanent and they're forever. And if you take these beatings, these unnecessary beatings, I mean, the fight was over after three rounds. And I heard the announcer say, we didn't need to even let go to the fourth or fifth round here. Well, you know, why didn't you jump up there? At least you know what I did one time? There was a fight going down in Atlantic City between Ray Mercer, who was a 1988 Olympic gold medalist, and Tommy the Duke Morrison. He was, of course, the star of Rocky V. He played Tommy Gunn with Sylvester Stallone. I mean, he was a pretty noted heavyweight, a solid amateur. I think he was like 220-20 as an amateur. 38-3, I think, as a professional with one draw, of course, had beat George Foreman allegedly and things like that. But, you know, Tommy the Duke Morrison was fighting Ray Mercer. And I had just seen a fight about a month and a half earlier in San Jose, California, where I saw a young man get killed by the name of Rico Velasquez. And before he got killed, I went up to the referee just before the round before which he died and fell down. I said, Hank, you got to stop. Hank Gillespie was the referee. I said, Hank, you got to stop this fight. Please stop this fight. And he told me, he took a towel, wiped his brow, and told me, I'll never forget this. Son, go sit down and let me do my job. And I said to him, Hank, he's going to kill him. He's knocked him out 7 or 8 times. You missed 3 or 4 knockdowns. Let me do my job. 40 seconds later, he was dead. Okay, so you can sort of sense when the Grim Reaper was in the room. So when Tommy Morrison is getting hit by Ray Mercer, these heavyweight blows from the 1988 Olympic gold medalist at heavyweight that was 201 pounds at that point in time. I mean, he's hitting them with a barrage of punches, and they keep going and going and going. So I run from across the ring. I'm like 8 rows back. I run from across the ring, and I start screaming at the top of my lungs across the ring at Larry Hazard, the head of the New Jersey Athletic Commission. I go, Larry, you got to stop this. You got to stop this. Larry, Larry. And Larry gets me. He sees me. Boom. He jumps up on the apron. And he got referee Tony Perez to stop the fight. Of course, that saved Tommy the Duke Morris's life, I thought. Anyway, same thing applied last night with Calvin Kattar. I mean, after 3 rounds, the fight was over. It was, I said, a 5-round decision went for Max Holloway. And it was a beating that Calvin Kattar may never – put it this way. You can't take that many lickings. You're not a Timex watch. You're a body. You're a human being. And for 10 minutes here, the 2 5-minute rounds, for 10 minutes of so-called entertainment for bloodthirsty fans of Dana White, this guy's got to take an ass kicking. I'm not down with it at all. Anyway, here's Max Holloway post-fight.
I felt good. I felt great, man. I was in there. The man was saying that he had the best boxing in all MMA. I wanted to prove that wrong. The man was calling me a freshman. I wanted to pick the, you know, there's freshmen, and then there's freshmen that come up, and then they take your girlfriend. I'm the guy that they take your girlfriend. So wrong freshman he picked on, you know what I mean?
Were you really picking out everything from his interviews and using that as fuel for the fire?
Oh, for sure, you know, for sure. And he's good. He's great.
Oh, yes.
He was in there with me. He had to be, you know, people like to say I'm one of the best 145ers ever. And this guy was sharing the octagon with me. I had to respect that. You know, he won. We fought same opponents here and there. He finished both of them. I got a decision win. So I had a goal to prove, you know. I want a goal and show the world and be a legend in this sport. And this is the kind of performance. And live on ABC, baby, I got to do a thing, you know. The who's who fought on here, you know, Muhammad Ali, Roberto Duran, you know, all these beasts, and I get to put my name, and we get to actually have historic nights. I heard before we came in, that I landed like 700 plus strikes in the UFC, the first ever. So, what a night, bro! What a night.
Well, I'm gonna tell you what you did. You've got the record for the most plus 100 strikes in back-to-back fights. The record for the most strikes ever in a UFC fight. Max, you keep getting better.
I keep getting better, baby. I told you guys before, I'm only 29. People keep forgetting. People keep forgetting, you know. I've been in here since I was 20. I couldn't even go. I fought in Las Vegas on the Nick Diaz and Carlos Condit card. And I'm here, and Carlos is fighting on one of my cards. This is insane, you know. I was like tripping out. It's the first time I got to see Carlos, I think, well, being on the same card. And to be that and do it, we got to go from there for here. You know, I was 20 at the time. Now I'm 29. I want to get better, man. You guys can see my face. Hopefully I want to be around here quite a long time, you know. I don't know if I'm going to do DC long time, but I want to be around here for a long time.
In that last round, you were looking at DC and I and Anik, and you were head movement while you were looking at us. And, I mean, he's a dangerous individual, but you started fast. You kind of put him on the back foot immediately. Was that the game plan specifically?
I mean, we was looking at the numbers. People was always bringing up numbers, this and that, and what we found out was, like, my significant strike output was more than his significant strikes absorbed, you know, my percentage, you know. And I was like, I just got to get there and do my thing, you know. This guy was tripping out. It was like, I have 23 plus fights, and he only has 8, and it's so high, you know, his percentage so high of absorbing strikes. So I was like, this guy might be there to hit him, so I'm going to keep touching him until he gets out of there.
Those greats that fought on ABC, the Roberto Durans and Muhammad Ali's, they would have watched that and been incredibly impressed. That must mean something to you. That means a lot.
These guys, these are guys, you know. I felt like a little Muhammad Ali in the last one when I was talking to you guys.
That's what
I had to do, you know. This guy, like I said, this guy was talking about our boxing. All respect to him, but us boxing, especially from Waianae, Hawaii, we live a bit different out there. We just live a bit different, I promise. I promise we live a bit different out there with our boxing skills. So I'm glad I got to try that tonight.
Max Holloway, 26-6, the former featherweight champ, of course, now in line for a shot at Alexander Volkanovski, the current featherweight champ at 145 pounds. Of course, he had beat Volkanovski, I thought, in the rematch, lost the initial fight. Sort of thought maybe it was time for Max to go, because, you know, when you lose a fight in MMA, I hate to say it, but the damage that you take, and if you don't look good, if you have really a bad outing, maybe you had a hard time making the weight, this and that, you just look absolutely pathetic physically. He didn't look pathetic the first time with Volkanovski, but he didn't look good, and he lost the fights. But the second fight, there's no doubt about it, Max Holloway deserved the penthouse. Instead, he got the shaft as far as the elevator was concerned. He didn't get the elevators to the penthouse, he got the shaft. But the bottom line is, now they're going to match him up with Volkanovski, I guess, for the third time. But Max Fall is now 26-6. Of course, he won 10 fights by decision, 10 by KO, 1 by submission. And, of course, he lost the 6 fights, 1 by submission, and 5 decisions. Now, Mr. Kattner came in at 22-5, left at 22-6. More power to him, but the beating he took was just not worth it. I'm telling you, just not worth it. The rage of the MMA world. Let's talk about Conor McGregor. Of course, he's up January 24th, coming to some Fight Island in Dubai. Of course, I've been to Dubai, United Arab Emirates. If you ever go there, I don't know. I would never recommend that place. It was the biggest hellhole I ever been to. I thought Malaga, Spain was bad when I tried to broadcast from that hotel at 2 o'clock in the morning. I called it the hotel from hell, but no. Absolutely, the Arab Emirates were the worst place I've ever visited in my 34 countries around the world. Now, I hate to say that, and I don't think those people, the tourist association, is going to be sending me a letter like the Reno Visitors and Tourist Authority sent me a letter in 1992 when I said that Reno was a one-trough town and that all the women in Reno, I say, anyway, bottom line is I did Reno wrong. They didn't like it. I said, you know, most of the men in Reno are women. Ooh, and they didn't dig at it whatsoever. Bottom line is caught myself some heat in Reno. As far as today's concerned, you look at Conor McGregor, of course, and Dustin Poirier, they're going to do it a second time. Why? You know, I mean, Conor, good fighter, no doubt about that. And pound for pound, he's sort of like the guy that turns the pay-per-view crank, 22-4. Of course, the four times he lost, he's been submitted all four times. So he's tapped out, the great warrior, the great Irish warrior. Of course, got his own whiskey brand, that kind of good stuff. Not a big fan of his. Just not a big fan of his. Let's take that back. 26-6. Not a big fan of his as far as his, you know, the stuff he's done outside of the octagon is concerned. I said, I'm only supposed to appreciate him as a fighter. But when you look at the fact that he threw that hand truck at that bus and people got glass in their eyes, charged of glass in their eyes and this and that, and then he didn't get no time, you know, and had that been, I hate to say it, but I don't want to get race into it, but Jesus Christ, I have to think of Floyd Mayweather, the piece of puke that he is, and I know, you know, I don't like him, but if he'd have thrown a hand truck through a bus window and people got charged of glass in their eyes, I think he'd have been charged criminally. Okay, but Conor McGregor wasn't even charged criminally. I think that Dana White made a deal with the state of New York that he'd bring a UFC event back there if they let Conor McGregor go. And that's just my opinion, and maybe this may just my opinion. Anyway, Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier are going to go January 24th over there in Dubai. Of course, I said Conor 26-6, Poirier 22-4. Poirier was stopped the first time they fought. There's no difference probably in the second time. And why are they doing this for Conor McGregor? Well, they had him in shape for a fight a couple of months ago where he looked like he was in shape. I saw a couple of pictures of him. If they were current, he was in shape and ready to go, or maybe 10 or 15 pounds off of fighting weight. Don't forget, these guys never weigh what they weigh as far as fighting is concerned, especially guys like McGregor and Khabib, the lightweight champion. I mean, Khabib weighs in at 155, and he steps into that cage at 174, 175 pounds, which is totally unfair. Because in combat sports and pornography, there's one thing that matters a lot, size. And if you've got a guy that you can actually fight even straight up, you know, man to man, mano a mano, 175 pounds, I'll give or take a couple of pounds there, you've got an even fight. But if you got a guy weighing 177, the other guy's weighing 162, that's a 15-pound weight disadvantage, okay? And when you get these guys laying on top of you, like Khabib likes to smother you on the ground and then dirty fight you on the ground, I mean, it's just you can't win. You just can't win if you're giving up 15 pounds. You just can't do it. I mean, we talked about Roberto Duran in the previous segment. He was the only guy that could give up 15 pounds and kick somebody's ass. In fact, you know, they talked about these UFC fights being on ABC. I thought that was one of the greatest things ever, bringing some type of combat sports. Although I would prefer boxing back on ABC, but of course, ABC, ESPN, they're all one and the same. ESPN's got the contract with the UFC, and of course, the UFC rock and rolling on ABC. But talk about ABC's wide world of sports, Muhammad Ali, Sugar Ray Leonard, and of course, the great Roberto Duran. Manos de Pietra, guess what? He KO'd COVID too. He had it. They put him in a hospital in Panama, and he was out in 3 or 4 days. So more power to the people that can kick COVID, but you don't have to kick it if you don't get it. So prevent getting it. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, baby.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
He is the greatest fighter of all times next to me.
That's what I used to think. You have to feel that way. If you don't have confidence in yourself and you box, you're not going to win. You know what I mean? Nobody gets lucky. This is a game of skill and determination for the most part. If you're in better condition, you're a better skilled fighter, you're probably going to beat the other guy. The obvious advantage is to get in that position. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into the world of boxing and MMA. Today is Muhammad Ali's birthday, January 17th, 1942. Of course, he and I spent some time together, in a couple of different countries around the world, spent some time together here in the United States. So I was fortunate enough to spend a lot of time with him. In fact, I was trying to get a hold of Larry Holmes this morning, the former world heavyweight champion, and he just texted me back, "What do you want, Pancho?" not Pedro, Pancho. That's Larry making, you know, what cracks me up is when Larry used to do television with Ferdy Pacheco. Of course, he was a fight doctor on Showtime, later on Showtime, but originally on NBC Sports. And he was Muhammad Ali's fight doctor back in the 1960s. But he couldn't, his name was Ferdy Pacheco. And he couldn't say Ferdy. He had to call him Ernie. He couldn't say it. Anyway, let's go back to the UFC schedule real quick. But Muhammad Ali will be featured in hour number two in depth. Of course, this being his birthday. He passed away a few years ago in Arizona. The residual effects of just old age. I mean, you know, he stuck around a long time. In fact, Ali was here from the lickings he took and the poundings he took in the gym and things like that. He was here a lot longer than I thought he would be. So may God rest his soul. But we'll talk in depth about Muhammad Ali in hour number two. Real quick, Carlos Condit was a winner. And Lee Jingling was a winner as well on that UFC card from Dubai yesterday on ABC and ESPN+. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Stick around for hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, and Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Channel 217. Like a plethora of other internet platforms, always catch us live on sportsbyline.com. This may be a podcast, but the bottom line is we're live and we're kicking ass. Stay tuned for hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide coming up after the news right here on Sports Byline.